Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This episode of The Bib Show is brought to you by Bridge Street Capital Partners. Bridge Street is a Sydney-based corporate advisory firm that specializes in equity capital markets transactions for small-cap companies listed on the ASX, primarily in the mining, energy, and tech sectors. If you are a Section 708 sophisticated investor and would like to be on Bridge Street's distribution list for their upcoming capital raisings, send them an email with your details to info@bridgestreetcapital.com.au and mention The Bib Show in your message. And now, on with the show.
You're listening to The Bib Show. Bib is for business, investing and policy. That's what we're here to talk about. Don't forget to hit subscribe and rate us wherever you get your podcasts. And a reminder that all the financial information in this podcast is general in nature only. Speak to a professional advisor about your needs, which is me, technically. I am James Whelan, investment manager at VFS Group, joined by Paul Colgan, director at CT Group. How are you now, Paul?
Hello. How are you, James?
Not so bad. Now, Ken Vexler, head of Acumen Management in Amsterdam, is not joining us today. We're getting a bit of time zone pressure. The date is the 17th of September. My goodness, we're almost at the end of the final quarter of the year. Our guest today is Erika Berchtold, and I know that I've pronounced that incorrectly, so the 14 years of German in school is not paying off for me, Erika. I'm sorry about that. The CEO of The Iconic, formerly at Super Retail Group as MD of Rebel. And it's not a new move to the biggest online retailer in the country, but timely nonetheless. Numerous board positions, including, I believe, Sydney FC. Still, how are you now, Erika?
I'm very well, thank you, James. How are you?
Not so bad. And now, this is good to catch up with you again, Erika, because we are old, I would say, friends from about 1,000 years ago and lost contact because I am awful at human relationships, I suppose. I've been told many times, but also just sometimes people just sort of come and go, and that was it. So this came up, the reason that we've managed to get to this podcast was that you appeared on a different podcast, which was great. It was Mark Burros, and that was a sensational one. And it was a friend of mine was telling me about it. He said, this amazing woman has done this, and she's head of The Iconic. Oh, that's a timely move with the pandemic and everything. So she must be pretty smart. And she's done this and kids, and she's got this amazing the way of looking at things. And she's worked, and the ethic is fantastic. And she used to be at Rebel. She used to run Rebel. I'm just going, hang on, who is this? Who is this woman? And he's just gone, he's looked at Erika Berchtold. I've just gone, hang on a second. Wait a second. I used to drink with someone called Erika Berchtold at a little place called the Grosvenor Hotel. I think it was in Waterloo when I lived down it.
Divey little pub in Waterloo, yes.
And you and I used to just dominate the trivia week in, week out, I think.
Correct.
For memory as well.
Correct.
Yeah, they couldn't touch us. And it was one of those things that I was just reminded of that and your time at Rebel and how committed you were to the whole thing. And it was one of these little moments, and I keep on telling people about it because I'd started to play cricket just for it. And I was just like, I don't have any cricket gear. I've got to get it back. And then just out of the blue, a couple of days later, you said, meet me at the pub. And there's a full kit with a Grey Nicholas bat, Grey Nick pads, Grey Nick gloves, and the whole kit and caboodle and everything like that. You just go, here you go. That's great. And I've never forgotten it. And I still have it. And I still use it when I have to duck down to a net session when you get persuaded to go down. And that was just that little attention. I still remember you and the drive and the attention to detail that you had at your time at Rebel, and the fact that it's carried on now for people sort of casually passing and comment that they'd heard of you and just how amazing you are. So,
and here Erika, I am talking on your big podcast. Wow. Wow.
It's funny the way that it's gone, hasn't it?
It is. How are you at cricket?
I don't know how the mathematics on that bat, I had to send it away to the CSIRO because it's 90% edge, which is, they're mystified as to how a bat is almost entirely edge and handle. That's it. But it's good. I went on the last actual game of cricket I played with that was 68 not out to try and save the match, and that's when that bat was retired officially. So
excellent.
It is a fantastic piece of machinery, that one. Sponsored by Gray Nichols, obviously we are. Now, on to the questions, if you will. Now, you rolled into the job almost bang on a year out from the biggest yet shortest recession that the world has ever seen, with the fallout is still unresolved. There's two predictors for a recession. One is the inverted yield curve. We still don't know how the inverted yield curve managed to predict this recession, but it still did. And I suppose one of the smartest women in business making the move to online retail. Now, with everything that's happened, with the fallout and also the funny money that's been, I would say potentially maybe propping up a big portion of the industry, what do you think in retail? I mean, what's changed? What's stayed the same? What never comes back? What dies? And what do we leave in the mirror? And what's ahead? What haven't we seen yet?
Yeah, well, look, COVID, whilst quite a big thing to deal with as a business, you know, global pandemic, no rule book, no precedent really on that for most of us in leadership roles, I see it as more of an accelerator. You know, it's the great accelerator rather than the great disruptor, really, because it's really just accelerated what was going to happen in retail anyway. I mean, you mentioned that, yes, I joined the Iconic having spent many years in bricks and mortar retail. I'd love to say that I was strategically poised to, you know, see that pandemic was coming. But no, I recognised that retail was slowly headed into that online sort of space. And I thought, yeah, I want to jump into that and give that a crack and see how different that is. And of course, then COVID came along and just really accelerated that. And if you just look at online penetration, what should have taken years has just taken months. And, you know, at the Iconic last year, for example, we acquired over 1 million new customers. And that is people that had never shopped with the Iconic before. Now, that is unheard of. Like, to acquire that many new customers in 1 year is crazy. That would normally take several years. And, you know, once customers have experienced the convenience of online, I think they're all kind of saying it's going to be hard to go back. And I think you will see a bit of a return to physical retail, but I think you will also see online continue to grow. And, you know, us at the Iconic, I like to say that we're an old startup but a young retailer. We're kind of forging our own path ahead. We're using the benefits of our 10-year head start in online to continue being at the forefront of technology and you know, ways of working. But we're also trying to predict what could happen in the future and what we might be able to, you know, jump into. And one of the interesting things I saw in this pandemic for a business like ours at the Iconic was what used to be considered competition actually became partners to us. So if I think about a brand like Country Road, you know, owned by David Jones Group, they would normally have seen us as competition. They're now one of our biggest brands on our site. And for them to say, hey, we're going to jump into the Iconic's marketplace and actually see them as an incremental way of attracting customers and getting a different customer, I think is really interesting. I think customers have had a definite mind shift on the back of all of this, and they're being a lot more mindful and purposeful in their consumerism. You know, Australian made is very popular. And increasingly so. And we've seen a real uptake in customers using our considered edit, which is a way of filtering through and selecting products based on your own personal sustainability attributes that resonate with you. And over 50% of our customers are taking into account now ethical and sustainable qualities of clothes and shoes they're purchasing. Now, that was only 20% last year.
Wow.
Right, so to go from 20% last year to 50% this year is a big leap. And I think COVID has done a bit of a reset of people's assessment of what's important to them. And then what will stay the same? Well, the thing that I think is always the same, and a lot of people get caught saying, you know, talking about channels like online and offline, you know, customers don't think about that. Like they're not thinking about, oh, I'm going online shopping today or I'm going bricks and mortar shopping tomorrow. They're just thinking about, I need an outfit for a wedding or I need some new gym gear for outdoor exercise. And, you know, I think being central to your customer purpose and just trying to help them solve a problem, that's going to stay the same. And, you know, we'll just need to think of faster, more clever ways of doing that.
Now, Erica, maybe you can talk us through, you know, obviously it's been huge change for everybody and it's been wild for all sorts of industries and businesses, but maybe you can peel back the curtain a little bit and talk us through some of the things that you've done in the business to adapt and ride this out.
Yeah, it's been a really interesting time to be CEO, I have to say. I've learned more about crisis management and the virus and how to manage that in infectious periods. And, you know, we've got rapid antigen testing set up out at our FC. So having to actually get that set up and, you know, sourcing that in the first place, you know, it was pretty eye-opening. Dealing with New South Wales Health has been pretty eye-opening. And we're really fortunate that we're such a data-led business and they've been really impressed by the amount of data that we can get. You know, we could get people's rostering information, overlay that with CCTV footage and then bin locations that they had touched to be able to see close proximity of team members to each other. Like, that's been crazy. I think if I look at how we've weathered this storm or pivoted to this sort of climate, I mean, we are a business that's pretty young and pretty agile. And so we just had to, you know, maintain that sort of agility and speed. The iconic, you know, is super. I worked in retail for over 20 years and thought I'd seen it all in terms of how fast you needed to act. But geez, pure play retail takes it to a whole other level. We already had a strategic plan in place to try and diversify our product portfolio a bit before COVID. We recognised that we were quite dependent on women's apparel and even more specifically dresses. And guess what happens when you're in lockdown? You don't need any dresses or high heels or things like that. So the strategic plan that we'd already developed just needed to, you know, hurry the hell up. And so we introduced the beauty category over the last 6 months. We opened an online outlet. We introduced the toys category and expanded our kids' offering. And, you know, we've got more categories that actually this week we're launching our home category. So you can buy bed linen and some soft furnishings from us. So, yeah, it was really just about trying to remain agile and fast and, you know, and just really also be quite humble and grateful that we could continue to be in a position where we didn't have to pivot our business model per se, but we could stay operating and support our industry and the brands and our partners through this time. And so, yeah, it's been an interesting time.
And just to follow up on that, you know, obviously logistics has been a huge thing in everybody's life as we've changed the way we do pretty much everything. But what have you seen on the logistics side, like the supply chain delivery side of things? Like how have you, was there anything specific that you needed to do to make sure that you could keep getting stuff to people?
Yeah, we're already pretty fast. You know, the time it takes for us to receive a customer order, pick it, pack it, have it in a satchel on the back dock waiting to be picked up by a courier is under 8 minutes. And we're trying to get that even shorter, like to 5 minutes. And, you know, really partnering with our logistics partners, so Australia Post in particular, they keep fleets of people out at our warehouse, like courier drivers out at our warehouse to just be super fast with us. You know, when we have those big trading sort of periods or we're under a bit of pressure, they'll come and put some people into our facility out there just to help us kind of coordinate the traffic of parcels needing to go in and out. You know, really having to increase the communication to customers so that if there were going to be any delays, that we, you know, constantly communicated with them and gave them really great visibility of where their products were. But fortunately, touch wood, we haven't been too disrupted in our own facility. I mean, very little disruption in our own facility. And we haven't had to deal with too much disruption from our other external partners. But, you know, just working really closely with them to try and overcome any obstacles.
I think there is in fact, probably one truck that is dedicated from your distribution centre that is just en route to my place. The way that we've gone through this pandemic has been at least averaging one iconic bag a week, which is good. And sometimes it's for me, and most of the time it's not for me. But my amazing wife just absolutely loves it, and I hadn't really delved into it, but I did sort of I did sort of in prep for this. I looked at it, and immediately I was drawn into, oh, there's a discount for this, which is great, and obviously you get a discount for doing it. And it sort of takes you on a way which was very natural to go from the last time that I went and visited. So there's, yeah. the website leads you on this beautiful journey, and not blowing any smoke on this one, but it just seems like that it was a natural sort of direction to take you to the things that you actually need to see very easily. And it was that smooth sort of way without overstepping its boundaries on what it knows about you. And this is sort of leading into my next question about that a lot of companies, especially in retail, and we're seeing it now more and more in social media, we're seeing it in anything that's online. Some companies, they take an inch of data and they all of a sudden assume a mile about you. The old joke that Facebook starts advertising things to me before I've even thought about it it scares the hell out of me, that sort of stuff. And I've heard the expression that a good retailer, a good online service should act like a butler, not a stalker. So, you know, don't be the creepy guy who's just like, oh, I reckon you need another pair of gloves because you just lost them. It's just like, well, get the hell out of my life. Let me find that out for myself. That's the sort of story. But yeah. where do you think the boundary – I mean, you're one of these change actors. You're someone who could actually lead the way on this one. Mm-hmm. Where does the boundary sit between what a company does with the data and what it knows and then what it actually uses on with someone?
Yeah, look. It's a good phrase, actually, that you said there, that, you know, act like a butler, not a stalker. You know, no one wants to be stalked. And, I mean, how many times have you been having a conversation with somebody and then within an hour your phone has started to cough up all of these sort of ads to you, right? Like, no one wants that sort of level of intrusion. Our motto is really to be seamless when you know what you want and inspiring when you don't. And so what does that mean? Well, we want to, when you're jumping onto our site to look for a particular range of products, like you might want some new, I don't know, swimmers because it's going to be hot this weekend, you want to go swimming. Then when you know what you want, then we want to help you find that really, really quickly and easily through our navigation and filters and things like that, and through the product that we serve to you, and then give you a really great delivery proposition as well. But if there's times where you don't know what you want, like, hey, I need some summer clothes because the weather's getting warmer, then we want to inspire you and serve you up with product and brands that we think you would like based on what you've searched for before or other things that you've purchased from us. And so it's about using the data to be helpful and to be just the best shop assistant you've ever seen in your life, right? Like, just to be really helpful and informative and friendly about it and not crossing that line and going overboard with it. And so we kind of play a two-way conversation with customers and data, in that it's not just all about us secretly capturing data and then doing something with that. Like, customers voluntarily give us that sort of data. So we have something called wish listing in our navigation or in our product pages, where you can create your own wish lists of things. You can actually create a wish list board and send that to someone else and say, hey, hint, hint, here's some stuff that I like. You know, there's fit information. So you would tell us that in this brand I take this size, in this brand I take this size. And we could also have a look at what you've bought and, more importantly, what you've returned. And when you return it and you're selecting, you're returning it because it was the wrong size, it was too big or too small. All of that sort of data is really helpful for you as a customer to make sure you don't make that same mistake again. So it's about using data for good, not evil, and, you know, using it to really enhance the customer journey, I guess, and not cross that line.
That's we're just going to come to a question in just a second, Erica. But first, let's pay a few bills. Bridge Street Capital Partners, proud sponsor of the BIP Show, is also a Sydney-based corporate advisory firm that specialises in equity capital markets transactions for small-cap companies listed on the ASX, primarily in the mining, energy and tech sectors. Sophisticated investors who want to hear about Bridge Street's upcoming capital raises can send their details to info at bridgestreetcapital.com.au. Colgo, I think you had a question coming up.
I just want to jump down to, you know, obviously you talked about the technology there, and obviously such an important part of retail businesses. And look, all industries are to some extent going through a lot of change and transformation, you know, from mining to logistics, as we talked about, but also retail with technology. You know, some Australian companies and have grown from being very, very small to being enormously successful. And I think this is really one of the sort of untold stories of the last decade, is, you know, with the Atlassians, but also Canva this week running at a reported $55 billion valuation. Right? So
unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah. And can I just say, Mel Perkins, who runs that, she is fantastic. I've met her, interviewed her, and she is a really class act, really down to earth. And they're talking about giving away their money too. Look, so, you know, Canva, looking at $55 billion valuation. How do you think about the Iconic as a tech company versus being a retailer?
Yeah, look, I think we're equal parts tech company as we are retailer. And it's funny you mentioned Canva, because between us, Canva, Atlassian, Facebook, Google, we all seem to rotate some team members amongst each other. You know, they'll pick someone up from our business, we pick someone up from that business, and I think that is almost a proof point that we are very much a tech company. As I said before, we're an old startup but a young retailer, and tech is really embedded in every part of our business because of that sort of startup phase being only 10 years ago. And, you know, we have really rich data insights and analytics that allow us to make informed decisions across every facet of our business, whether that be buying or marketing or out at the FC, using robotics and using those sort of capabilities in our warehouse. And you know, I spoke about us being able to pick, pack and have an order ready for dispatch in under 8 minutes. I mean, that doesn't come without some sort of big tech investment, using AI and AR. And, you know, I'm really big on saying that everything that can happen in a store environment, in a physical environment, can happen online. We've just got to do that translation and map it. And using AI and AR is increasingly a fabulous way to be able to do that. And then just having smarter brand partnerships and using tech again to offer our brands more options on how they can partner with us. So, for example, we've got brands now that we might range a product wholesale, which means we buy the stock, put it in our warehouse, and say there's a shoe from Adidas and there's 10 different sizes. If we sell out of one of those sizes, we can still offer that product for sale on our site, and the system will know to spin that order out to Adidas directly and let them fulfill that straight to the customer on our behalf, because the customers wanted to purchase that from us. And so using tech to be able to fulfill customer needs really quickly and seamlessly is, you know, really important.
That is really cool.
Yeah. And, yeah. You know, like so for the customer, it's seamless, right? They don't even know that's happening. It just all happens in the background. Look, we do some other innovative sort of stuff. Like, we've tried stuff like drone delivery before. Can't say it's particularly scalable. And, you know, a business like ours that has, you know, just so many visits, like 17 million visits a month, you know, we need something that, you know, we want to be cool and innovative and try the new stuff, but we also need to be pretty practical and you know, ensure that it's going to do something meaningful for a lot of customers, not just, you know, three. So, and I think the tech side, like this whole, I hadn't really worked in that sort of world before. And when I joined the Iconic, the tech bit was the bit that I was most daunted by, because I hadn't really worked with a cool, young, funky tech team before. No disrespect, I have to say. Sorry to everybody else I've ever worked with that works in tech.
Not Jerry Harvey.
Yeah, I've just kind of sledged everyone. but you know, look, the Iconic, our average age is 27, right? Like, there's some really cool, innovative people in our business, and they were so welcoming to me and just showed me not to be afraid of that, and just how much tech was at the heart of everything that we did. And it's probably one of the biggest spotlights I want to put on our organization moving forward, that, hey, we are still a tech company and we won't be afraid to use it. And, you know, we're really going to do a lot more development in that space.
Do you want to go into that? If some other things, I mean, you mentioned drones. Was there any other, like, what doesn't work? What does work? What are some stuff that just got turfed? What's some stuff that you might be working on that we could not?
Yeah, like, I mean, some of the stuff that works, like, we've got this tool called Visualize, right, which is you can scan your foot and select a sneaker, and it will show you what that sneaker looks like on your foot virtually using AR. And I kind of thought that was going to be a bit of a gimmick, right? I'm like, yeah, okay, look, it's a nice thing to have, but, you know, what's it going to do? Well, what it actually did do was increase our conversion rate, because I think we'd underestimated how much people just love to try on a sneaker in store and see what it looks like on their foot. And so us being able to provide that for them virtually was something that actually increased conversion of people that were coming to the site looking at our sneakers. And it also reduced the return rate on that sneaker category, because, again, people could see what it looked like and got a better sense of what it was going to look like on them. And so after they purchased, they were less likely to return. So that was very encouraging for us. And there's other things. I mean, I said those wish list boards, they're something that's really popular, that you could put together a board and send it to someone and say, hey, here's what I want for my birthday, pick something from this. Yeah. We've also got Snap to Shop. Like, I could take a photo of something that you're wearing or something in a magazine and then upload that to our site, and it will find something similar in our range. Yeah, so that's pretty cool as well. So most of what we do works to varying degrees. You know, it's just, even the drone thing worked. It's just that not enough people really wanted that. And actually, even if they did want it, I don't think we would have been able to scale that up fast enough. So
yeah. I am reminded of when, and Colgo, this would have been probably when you were chief editor of Business Insider, and it was every time Amazon patented something, like an airship that would have drones flying out of the bottom of it, every single tech and media junkie lost their absolute biscuits about the yeah. revolution that it was, that we're going to have Amazon blimps lining the horizon, dropping furniture on top of us. It's nice to have. Can we talk about the experience? Classic man, I'm going to tell the CEO of an online retailer how it works. But the way that I see it as an investment manager is that I think a fair chunk of retail, the ones that are going to survive this, the experience is going to be, if you walk into a shop, then that experience had better be the best damn experience that you are ever going to get. And, you know, you can't have staff hiding like we see in some of the retailers now. I've joked in the past that if we ever have to fight a guerrilla war, then we should get the staff from David Jones potentially to fight on our side, because you'll never be able to find them in the jungle. But you know what I mean. So if you are going, the ones that are still standing out the front, I mean, they've got to be the best. Now, you guys don't really get that chance to actually have the smiling face in the morning. What else are you doing that's working on the experience?
Yeah, look, I mean, when we get back into being able to get out and about, we will do some what I call physical sort of touch points with customers. Like, so we normally go to music festivals like Blues Fest or the like. But when we go to those sort of things, we don't just kind of set up a trestle table and flog a few T-shirts. Like, we set up a front loader washing machine that you have to crawl through to get into an exclusive dance party out the back with some DJs. And, you know, so we will continue to be innovative like that and do our kind of runway shows and things like that. You know, we've got other kind of technology that we're developing at the moment that will continue to develop and get in front of customers in a way that no one else is. And I'm not going to talk too much about that because it's all very secret squirrel, but we've got some big moves in that kind of virtual sort of space. And look, there's other categories that we'll continue to get into as well, and also sub-edits within categories. Like, we've recently launched adaptive wear so that people with disabilities can, you know, buy fashionable, beautiful sort of product. We'll increase our sustainability sort of ranges. We're doing a lot in the Indigenous space. So we had our first Reconciliation Action Plan signed off by Reconciliation in Australia last year, and I'd really love to do a lot with Indigenous artists and designers. So we'll continue to do some things like that as well.
Certainly, you know, there's a big appetite out there, isn't there, Erica, for like, how do we find ways to celebrate and place Indigenous culture at kind of the at the heart of day-to-day Australian life, you know, rather than it being this thing that's kind of that belongs to a group of people. It's something that, you know, belongs to the whole country.
Yeah, and, you know, I think we can play a role. Like, at the Iconic, like, we're young and we may not be the biggest, but we won't be afraid of taking a leadership position in a lot of important topics like this. And I believe we can really provide mentorship to a lot of Indigenous people, whether they be artists or whether they be designers or just young kids that want to get into different careers, whether it be marketing or buying, and they don't know how to do that. So we're really going to look at the pathways we could provide for the Indigenous community on a lot of different fronts, and I feel quite passionately about that.
Yeah, it's great. And I think one of the things we work on the campaign for a referendum on The Voice to Parliament. And it's really about, you know, empowering Indigenous Australians to have a say over the things that affect their life. You know, you know, so many things have been tried in terms of addressing some of the disadvantage and, you know, closing the gap, as we call it, you know, which is, you know, in incarceration rates, education, life expectancy, all of that kind of stuff. So many things have been tried, and often with very, very good intentions. And the one thing that kind of hasn't been happening properly is getting Indigenous people themselves to have a say in the things that affect them. It's really great to see. I think really important that the business community shows leadership on this, you know, and that it's not just a sort of cultural thing that's happening. So good on you, yeah.
Looking at the mentoring thing, you mentioned that the move that you made in 2019 or late 18 when you made the move, you discussed it with your mentor. The people that I know that are doing really well, and the CEOs and the high level guys that I know, they've all got mentors, and I consider myself not being one of those people who's going to get one, and I don't, because I'm just a stubborn, you know, descendant of Irish people, and that's just the way that we work. What can you run me through the mentor, like, how does it work? I'm sorry, like, this is a really, really stupid, like, the dumbest question you're going to get. No. How does the mentoring thing work? You sign up to a facility and they just assign you a guy or what? Like, I honestly don't know how it works.
You're talking about mentor walks that I do or mentoring for myself?
No, the mentoring. Like, you had a mentor that you referred to on the decision that you made in 2018.
Yeah. Well, it was less a formal mentor sort of program. Like, I found it hard to identify mentors along the way, but I've probably just had some clever people that I knew that I would just lean on for, you know, advice or just to be a sounding board a little bit during the time. And, you know, there's one person in particular, a lady called Leslie, who's someone that I hold in very high regard. She does a bit of executive coaching sort of stuff with me sometimes and helps me with some team building, you know, activities and organisational stuff. And, you know, I remember at the time when I was thinking about joining the Iconic, I needed that sounding board. I needed somebody that could, you know, just talk objectively with me about it, because I joined the Iconic. I was 5 months pregnant when I joined the Iconic, right? Now, the safest, best thing in the world for me to do would have been to stay in the job that I was at and then go and have a baby and take my mat leave and, you know, come back and, you know, just cruise, I guess. And actually, I decided not to do that, and I needed some encouragement just to say, hey, it's okay, you're clever enough, you'll figure it out. Like, and So I guess, yeah, using those sort of sounding boards of people that you know to just, she didn't tell me anything that I wasn't already thinking. she just gave me the confidence to ask myself the tough questions and to actually say, yeah, I'm going to do this and confront my own fears and go, look, I recognize them and I'm going ahead with this anyway. And I actually do try and help play a bit of a mentoring role for other people, whether it be in our organization or there's an organization called Mentor Walks where I try and volunteer my time to that and try and help some particularly up-and-coming women. I think mentoring doesn't have to be really hard or formal. It can just be a conversation with somebody and just saying, hey, here's what I'm thinking about. What do you think? What's your experience been on this? And have some pretty informal sort of conversations.
Okay. So it's I'm going to have to bite the bullet and get one eventually. And there you go. And I'm sure that everything will happen after that, which is amazing. I don't have any more questions.
But you don't, James. You don't actually have to get one because what you could be doing is saying, hey, Erica, meet me at the Grosvenor for beer and can I just pick your brain on this? And that's as complicated as it needs to be, right? So, yeah, don't feel that you need to do because I don't really subscribe to the whole formal official sort of mentoring program. Who's got time for it anyway, right? But using people as sounding boards, I think, is helpful.
Can I ask you, Erica, what you think the important things are for young people coming up who are maybe ambitious and might like to do a job, you know, similar to yours in the future? What do you think are the important things for people now to focus on?
Look, I'd say being able to build a good rapport with your team or just with people generally. I mean, look, I met James years and years ago, you know, would chat to him at the pub, gave him some cricket gear. You know, just being able to have a conversation with people and just listen more than you actually talk. You know, you've got two ears and one mouth for a reason, so just listen a lot more than what you actually talk and you learn a lot of things about people. And, you know, really understanding that there's financial metrics that you need to focus on, like sales and profit. But there's other things in business that are equally important, like employee engagement, like how happy your staff are to be working for your organization, what they're telling you that you should be doing more or less of, customer engagement, like those things are as important, if not more, than actually the sales and profit. Because if your team aren't happy and your customers aren't happy, you're not going to have the sales and profit to worry about. And I think fostering diverse teams, and diversity doesn't just mean gender. I mean, yes, I wave the flag of female diversity and gender equality, certainly, but diversity takes many shapes and forms, and there's race, religion, age, experience, and I think trying to just build enough diversity around you and around the boardroom table or the executive table so that you have really good quality conversations, which will then lead to even better quality decisions. I think that's just, something that's really important. And then finally, you know, don't be an ass. Like, no one wants to help someone that's just an asshole. So just be nice, be friendly, be humble, and then people will generally want to help you.
Yeah. I've got nothing more to ask you, Erica. Anything else to add for this one, Colgo? Otherwise, we're happy to wrap it up. This has been a fascinating segment.
Yeah, I'm done. This has been great, Erica. Thanks so much. And, you know, we do occasionally have CEOs on here, and I think it's a great change of pace for us. You know, it is business investing in policy, and we tend to be very heavy on the investing in the policy side. But, of course, there's nothing to invest in and run policy for if you don't have businesses in the first place. Yes. So thank you.
Thanks, James and Paul, for having me on your podcast.
Thank you very much, Erica. Do we do an ad, Paul? Okay, Bridge Street Capital Partners is a Sydney-based corporate advisory firm that specialises in equity capital markets transactions for small-cap companies listed on the ASX. I'll have to take a breath. Primarily in the mining, energy and tech sectors, sophisticated investors, aka 708s, who want to hear about Bridge Street's upcoming capital raises can send their details to us, to me, to get in contact, or if you want to go direct to them, info@bridgestreetcapital.com.au. They've got good deals. I do participate in them myself, full disclosure, and we are very happy to have them as an amazing sponsor. Don't forget to subscribe to the show, rate and review, and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget 5 stars, 5 stars, 5 stars. We need them. We want them. That's how everything keeps turning. You can find us on iTunes at The Bip Show or wherever you get your podcasts. We're on Twitter. It's at @_bip_show. And we're on Facebook too for some reason. Just search The Bip Show. I've got a website, and good for me. It's called Wheel and Capital. Just Google it. Follow the links, and I do things on there. And this one, I try as hard as I can to put a note out every week based on things that were said here. Erica, I'm almost certain that I've already got a note written in my head about what we've talked about today. And I'll get it to you as quick as I can if you want to have a bit of a proof of it before it goes out. Individually, on Twitter, we've got @Colgo. We've got @JamesWhelan42, a.k.a. The Answer, and @KenVexler. Erica, you're not on Twitter, and that's probably one of the smartest things I've ever heard.
I was, but I don't have time for Twitter.
Sums it up beautifully. Erica, thank you so much for joining us. It has been a fantastic catch-up, and I'm going to lean on you for a few beers once the doors open again in a few weeks.
Excellent. Thank you.
All right, this show is produced by Rick Salter, and we'll catch you next time. Thanks for listening. Good on you, Colgo.
Thanks.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.